WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Barry Harris is in the studio with me now. Let me tell you a little bit about him. He has played with Youssef Lateef through the years from about 1951 through 1970. At around 1960, he joined the Cannonball Adderley group after Bobby Timmons left as the piano player. He also joined Max Roach's group after Clifford Brown and Richie Powell passed away unexpectedly. He's also played with Coleman Hawkins. Right now, he's presently the house pianist for the new jazz label Xanadu Records, which was started in about 74 or 75, I think, by Don Schlitten. How did you join up with Xanadu?
Well, you know, Don Slinton and I have been associated so long, you know. He's been the A&R man on about all the last 10 or 15 albums I've been on, you know, with different people, so we're sort of tight. So he formed his label and I went with him, you know.
I have a lot of respect for his productions because they're always free from commercial veneer.
Yeah, well, see, Don is a true jazz lover. You have to hear him talk about when he was a kid going down listening to Bird and stuff, you know. So, and it's been pretty good too because we just we just took some of the stars from Xanadu and we just come back from a trip to Japan, you know.
What kind of places did you play in Japan?
Just all beautiful places. Well, you know, it was like from city to city. Boy, so many cities, you know, Tokyo, Osaka, Kyoto, Kanazawa, Niigata, Fukuoka, Sendai. And see, we played concerts, all Steinway pianos, beautiful halls.
That doesn't happen very often over here, does it?
Well, I tell you, Japan was like that period. There's a lot of things happening in Japan that doesn't happen over here. You know, like being greeted. It's really weird being greeted by a beautiful lady with a bouquet of roses and flowers and, well, you know, photographers and people asking for autographs. It's such a gas.
So you were well known when you arrived?
I tell you, it was so shocking to me. It was like I was living in a little dream, you know.
Do the record stores in Japan carry Xanadu records?
Yes. They carry a whole lot. Those people probably know more about jazz than any country in the world. They really are jazz lovers, you know, and I tell you, I've never had this experience. I mean, it would be beautiful to have this experience in my own country, but I guess that's not the way of the thing. But I mean, just to have the experience of just having people just dig you for you and dig you for your music and want your autograph. I autograph pocketbooks. I autograph shirts. They come in with stacks of records. I just never had anything. When I would go to catch a train, every time we went to catch a train, somebody would be there for autographs. You know?
That's
this
true.
Is like, it's just one of the most unbelievable experiences. I think I lived, you know, I live and die quite often, so I lived then, you know, it's weird. I came back here, I died. But then I went and I did a lecture at Rutgers, and I told him about Japan. And it was weird, too, because it was like three pianists, Billy Taylor, Patty Bowen, and myself. And we each would play. Billy Taylor started out, and, you know, give a little bit about yourself. And so it went along good, and I was the last one, and it seemed like they wouldn't even let me come off the stand because I told them about Japan and how beautiful it was, you know, and how really, I guess, I don't know. We have a lot to learn. Maybe it's because they're so old and have such a culture. Maybe it's because they're one people, too, you know, that kind of thing.
Was there a specific age span of people who seemed most interested in
young.
Jazz? Young.
Can you imagine that? Young? And like, nowadays it's really odd here in the United States. You might find somebody 30 who doesn't know about jazz at all, see?
Well, there aren't, like on the radio stations here, there aren't, well, in Philadelphia, there's RTI, which is the Temple University College Station, which pretty well plays jazz throughout the day.
Yeah.
But there aren't now any commercial radio stations specializing in jazz.
I know, it's really changed. Well, you know, I'll tell you, be truthful. Don't give anybody the impression that jazz was ever popular. Jazz was never popular, you know. Like, jazz would have just had its spot. But when we were young, well, there were so many great jazz musicians in different cities. Like you can see by the number of jazz musicians Philadelphia produced. The number of jazz, well, really the two cities are Philadelphia and Detroit, you know. I mean, for producing good jazz, and that's because of the good, just local jazz musicians around who could play, you know. Well, now we have the little bit of jazz that is being played, a lot of it, is young musicians who have been governed by Downbeat Magazine. They've told them who is this, and half of them think that jazz began with Coltrane, which is a mistake in itself right there. Because if you think Coltrane had anything to do with Prez and Coleman Hawkins and them, you can forget it, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, he might have had his niche, you know, or whatever you call it, but it didn't begin with them. It didn't begin with Pharoah Saunders. Well, see, I can see why most people go to rock and roll, because some of the jazz that's played is enough to make me want to listen to rock and roll myself, you know. Even though one thing I notice about rock and roll, one thing I really don't, I worry about it, is that it's weird when you travel all over the country and you find all the people doing the same dances, singing the same lyrics to the same rock and roll tunes. And it got to be a case where I went in a restaurant. I used to go in every day, and I say, I'm going to check and see if these tunes come on at the same time, and they come on at the same time. See, I don't like that, because that sounds like programming, and that sounds like possibly the robots of the future aren't going to be robots that they make. It's going to be human robots, because this is what it's adding up to now.
Well, a lot of jazz musicians now, and I don't know whether it's through their own wishes or through their producers' wishes, are playing
the rock thing.
Rock and funky.
Well, you know, half of them say
electric guitar, and not electric guitar, but electric bass.
Yeah.
And,
well, you hear all kind of excuses for why they do, but we do know really that basically why they do is money, you know. And I mean, well, that's where I try to distinguish myself. I've never really gone after money. I've never made any money in my life, you know. And well, I consider that the artist part. You know, I don't mind the suffering, long as I can play what I want to play, and try to do it as best I can, you know. And it's like, you know, the reason I came here today is really strange. You know, I feel like I'm supposed to be connected with Philadelphia some kind of way, because I'm steeped in the best of jazz, you know. And I mean, my ideals in my head, which I've never been able to attain myself, are governed by what I heard in person, not what I heard on records, by hearing Charlie Parker in person and having the feeling that only Charlie Parker could produce in you, the feeling that started in your toes and went all up over you, and it was just like almost orgasmic, you know, that kind of thing. And played with Prez, you know, and played with a whole lot of these people. And from this, it's like, and listen to Bud, and, you know, from this, it's like I am part of like what might be a lost thing, you know, because there aren't that many musicians my age. It's like they were wiped out some kind of way, probably the Korean War and dope or whatever it is, but that's part of it. But see, I feel like I'm supposed to have something in Philadelphia. I've always felt that in my life, you know. Even though I've just played in Philadelphia a few times, and not very successfully. Some success. I played here with Cannonball at Gleason's. Is that it? Was that Gleason's? Is that a place called Gleason's? Peps. That's what I'm trying to say, Peps. Mm-hmm. And then I played at the Showboat, and I've played at the Blue Note. I played the Blue Note with, I was here for Clifford Brown's funeral.
You'll be playing in Philadelphia on May 10th.
May
10th,
I'll be at the Painted Bride. A little very small place, but I know, of course, there should be about 3,000 people. They don't seat but 90, but we have 3,000 standing outside cheering and hustling to get in, you know, that kind of thing. It would be beautiful to see that, you know, but I mean, I don't know what has happened with our country. The only thing I can see, you know, like a Japanese country, I can understand it, because the country has such a culture that goes back such a long ways, and they're one people. That's something important. Like, we are a conglomerate. We know that far as history is concerned, probably our country is the one to write about now, because our country is history being made, because we have to get together, we as like a people, so that for once, if we could just come up with something that we could consider culture, like what jazz now is weird. Jazz is considered cultural, our culture all over the world, but here in the United States, you know. And this is like a sort of horrible thing, really, in some kind of way. Why it should be considered in Europe. It's weird. I had to go to Japan to pick up a record of mine that they haven't released in the United States, which probably won't sell that much in the United States anyway.
What record is that?
Oh, it's one called Vicissitudes, you know, and it's a good record too. It's got a lot of original tunes, and I did it with George Duvivier and Leroy Williams. And I had to go to Japan to pick up my own record because they don't release it in the United States.
What label is it on?
It's on a German label, BASF, MPS or something like that it's called.
Oh, BASF certainly distributes in America.
So, you know, this kind of thing is sort of disheartening, you know, not to say the least, really, because, I don't know.
Is there jazz being produced by Japanese musicians?
Yes. I went into some clubs, and really, it's really weird. The ones I heard, they sounded better than American young cats playing jazz. So it's like they're really trying to get tuned into it. They're really trying to get tuned into tuned into it right, because they're talking about Bird, and they're talking about Art Tatum, and they're talking about the right people. See, and that's the people you got to talk about, and as far as our music is concerned.
In Philadelphia, there's a lot of avant-garde jazz musicians from New York who often come in to play at the Foxhole, often affiliated with the Jazz Composers Orchestra. Are there people playing that kind of jazz in Japan now?
Oh, there might be some avant-garde boys, too. But see, you know, like most avant-garde boys, I mean, it's so weird. You know, see, I've been around New York quite a few years now, and there used to be a place over on McDougal Street where a lot of young musicians used to go and play. I used to drop in there occasionally, and half of them couldn't play. But now half of those same cats who couldn't play then are considered great avant-garde cats now, and they couldn't play. See? So you see, avant-garde is a lot of B.S. Sereni, because these very cats, and if I started naming off names, people would say, oh, you know, if I would just name one name that I know of, cat who couldn't play in the first place, so he can't. The only way we're going to get an avant-garde is going to have to be somebody who can come through all of it. And you see, you evolve into growth. You don't wake up one morning and say, I'm going to put my pants on backwards. That's not necessarily, you'll be different. But that's not necessarily evolving into something. I'm talking about evolving from. We have to come from to evolve into. You know what I mean?
What musicians who are playing very contemporary stuff do you like now?
Well, I'd say if I was going to take one, I'd take McCoy, because that's sincerity, that's humility, and that's it's beautiful qualities about McCoy. It's not even that it is, I have to listen to him, and I have to say that maybe I just not my stick, but I have to listen to him because I dig him so much, you understand? And I know that he is diligent, you know, that kind of thing, where there are some. You take a cat like, I'll name one. You take one like Herbie Hancock. Herbie Hancock started out making Watermelon Man years ago, and he made a fortune off Watermelon Man. You know, now if a cat can make Watermelon Man and make money and be interested in making money, how can he be considered avant-garde particularly? You know, it's something sort of phony about the whole thing, really. You know, and then all of a sudden it's the rock thing, you know. So they make all the money, but they're still just really phony cats because they haven't stuck to this great thing that was left for us. See, we have a great heritage. And I mean we as Americans. We have great heritage set forth by Art Tatum, Prez, Coleman Hawkins, Yard. These people, I mean, you can name off a lot more than that, you know, but these are my main ones. And the Monk, you know, these people set a thing that we have to, it's like anything else. When you go to school, you have to learn words. The same thing, when you come through this, you have to learn the words of the music, and they come from these cats.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you come out, you say the words your way. That's good, but you had to come through that. So now I can't consider most avant-garde cats or the rock and roll jazz musician who's making the money. I can't think too much of any of them because it's not involved with money. It's involved with love of, you know, it's involved with something else entirely.
For our young musicians who are first starting to play now, the only way to really hear that tradition is through recorded albums.
And you know what's funny is that they don't get a chance to hear it, so they don't even know. See, that's just it.
What do you mean they don't get a chance?
You think about it. A young musician, he'd be lucky. You would find a young musician would be lucky to have heard a Bird record, maybe. Think about that, because don't too many radio stations play them. And see, now we all, you know, we also live in an age where old folks don't like to be old folks. See, and that's what's the drag about our country, is like we've got the old folks wearing the high heel shoes and the floppy hats and this feminine looking stuff that they're putting out for us, you know. And we've got old folks who don't want to be old folks. Now, we had old folks who wanted to be old folks and stuck to their gun, who did their dances, so that the young person could see their dances, you know. Because I can't consider no. I mean, if I think about the dancing when I was young, I know the dancing nowadays, there's no comparison between them, because the dancing, when I was young, if there were people who danced so good that if the drummer turned the beat around a little bit, they'd stop dancing. If the drummer played, if you played a ballad, they'd double time. If you played a real fast tune, they cut the time. People, these weren't musicians, these were just people. So you can't, there's no comparison between that dancing and this dancing of the day. This robot and all that kind of stuff. And plus, the main thing wrong with all of this stuff nowadays is that, you know, I played a dance not that long ago with a musician. He called me, and so it's a gig. And so we played a rock and roll beat all night long, but nobody danced. But you know when they dance, one cat say, oh, I know a tune that they know. The minute he played the tune that they knew exactly like the record, they got up and danced. So that's a drag, because in other words, the dancers are dictating that even the rock and roll cat can't be creative. Mm-hmm. They don't want creativity. They want you to play the same thing. And see, this is not supposed to be. And dancers are supposed to be more creative than that. They're supposed to be creative enough to dance to anything.
Right,
you know?
I guess the same kind of syndrome as if you're performing and all right. Everybody wants to hear is what you've already recorded.
Right, right. Same yeah. thing. That's why a jazz musician catches the devil. He might make a tune that's a hit, you know? So pretty soon you make five tunes that's a hit, and pretty soon you have to play those five tunes every night, every set, because the same people aren't there for the set before. So you end up playing. I did it with Cannonball. It's really weird. We did a week of shows at the Apollo, and we went to Washington. This was with the Ray Charles group, you know. And so we had played that tune, the hit tune, on 66 shows. And the 67th show, Sam Jones said, look, if you play that tune this time, I'm quitting the band. We didn't play the tune, and we got just as much response as when we played it. It's really weird. You know, so things are really strange that way. You have to be really careful of this hit tune things, and it's so weird, you know. Like, there are supposed to be more hipper young people, but I can see why it's not, because there's nothing really, we aren't giving them the hip, and when the old people are trying to be younger, it's really a drag. So the whole thing is sort of funny. And then when you read about people, you read about, we have music now that kills flowers. You know, they play it so loud that it's known that it kills flowers. They had an article in the paper about some people walked out of a club, and this is more than one person, and they couldn't hear. And they found out it wasn't temporary. It's permanent. They will never hear again because of this loud disco rock and roll stuff. Now, this kind of stuff. And plus, we read about high heel shoes. We see more people walking around on crutches. We see people with teeth broken out in the front. And also, we know the high heel shoes are bad for a man's prostate gland. Now, if a cat can't dig, that it's bad for his prostate gland. I mean, that's where his being is, you know? And I mean, no telling what he's messing up there. And, you know, what you going to do when you got people like that? Yeah. We got people who limp across the street to be in style. We got old people who don't want to be old, you know, and stick to their thing, you know? So it's weird country right now.
I'm speaking with Barry Harrison. Barry, let's take a break here and listen to your album with vocalist David Allen, also on Xanadu Records. I think it's a really beautiful recording. Can you tell us a couple of words about David Allen?
Oh, well, you know, my first time hearing David Allen, I was so gassed by him. I consider him probably the greatest singer, because he did an album of tunes with old folks who live on the hill, and I never heard of the cat before, you know? And I've been impressed with him ever since. And so this was an opportunity last year, not this year, last year in February, I went out and I made this recording with him, you know, and it was a gas.
Okay, this is a recording from the David Allen album featuring Barry Harris on the piano. It's called Don't Look Back.
You right out of my life, laugh and forget this affair. Guess I was foolish to care. I'm gonna dance you right out of my dreams. Try to act carefree and gay. I guess I'll learn to play the part. And when our friends begin that heartless rumor, then my sense of humor, I'm gonna laugh you right out of my life, make it a beautiful joke. No one will know you broke my. And if you find that you and I really meant that last goodbye, then I'm gonna laugh so hard.
We just heard from the album Don't Look Back. It featured David Allen, the vocalist, and Barry Harris, of course, backing him up on the piano. And Barry Harris is in the studio with me now. The album, by the way, is on Xanadu Records. It must be a very different experience to be backing up a singer of such soft and beautiful ballads. You must really have to be very, very subtle in your playing.
Well, we had to. I guess we practiced for a couple of days, you know. And because I've never done that before, and I don't think he's ever done it either, just a pianist and a singer, you know.
Well, that's what I really loved about the album, because when it came in and I noticed that there was just you playing with him, I said, that's going to be really nice.
So, you know, we worked on it. You know, these mostly, and plus they were mostly his tunes, like original tunes I never heard before, really. I didn't know any of them. We just got together and we just did it. Well, I did a few things out there, because I did one with Sam Nodo at the same time. And with David Allen, and plus with alto player
Sonny Chris,
you know, I did three things out there for Xanadu, you know, and then I came back and did my own. But this is a nice album, David Allen, you know, nice quiet listening, you know.
You do your own arrangements for the album?
Yeah, well, this is just like we just play, you know, we just improvise, and that's what we did. He sung the melody, and we just went along with it, you know.
Your album of Ted Dameron compositions, was that your idea to
well,
put that together?
It's partly because me and Don had talked about that, been talking about something like that for a long time, you know, since Ted died. And that's where we agreed, you know. It's not that anybody tells me exactly what to play, because I'm sort of funny that way. That's why I probably never made it. you know, but we agreed on this, and I didn't mind playing Tad's because I respect Tad very much, you know. Tad was one of our greatest writers and arrangers, you know.
Am I mistaken in thinking that not too many people now are recording his compositions?
Well, you know, it's a thing now. Most people are recording their own compositions, you know. That's where we run into a difficulty, too, because there are composers and there are improvisers, you know. And not everybody is a composer, and not everybody is an improviser. One man can improvise on somebody else's stuff better than he can write and improvise. You know, it's sort of funny writing for yourself sometimes, you know, because you do write for yourself, and it gets sort of weird. But not too many people are playing Tad Dam. There are a lot of reasons for it, because I like to put a lot of originals on my records, because you can make a little money off of it too, you know. And see, that way, that's what a lot of people do too, you know. So it is a thing. But I just did this one because Tad is one of my people that I loved as a child, you know. And not that he was that much older than me or nothing, but he's one of the people I listened to as I learned.
I had something else I wanted to ask you about, about Japan again. Yeah. And if you're just tuning in now, Barry Harris recently came back from Japan, where he got a really outstanding recognition there. And what kind of places have jazz performance in them? Is it performance places or clubs? It's mostly clubs
performance
in the States.
No, it's performance places, you know. And they have clubs there where I went to hear jazz musicians, you know. But they have... Like every city had a beautiful concert hall with a beautiful big Steinway in it, 9-footer, you know, which was a gas all the way around. You know, I don't know if I, when it comes to concerts and clubs, I'm a cat. Like some jazz musicians say, they don't like to work in clubs. I don't mind working in clubs. I love working in clubs or a concert, you know. If I can get tuned in, you know, any of it's all right for me, you know. But, I don't know, Japan's just a special place, I tell you. It's just really, it's sort of disheartening when you get back to the United States. You sort of get next to you a little bit because, well, you know, a strange thing is this, is that out of all the time, even walking the streets of New York City, I've had about, on 5 occasions, I've had people recognize me and say, "You're Barry Harris," and they were Japanese.
Really?
Honest to God. So, you know, so I knew it was something happening in Japan, so I just found out the truth. And that's the truth, you know. See, because there's a lot of people who would know the difference between Barry Harris and anybody else. So I walk around hiding all day, you know.
You'll be playing in Philadelphia on May 10th at the Painted Bride Center, which is on South Street. That's a Monday evening. There's jazz every Monday night at the Painted Bride. Who are you going to be playing with?
Well, I'll have my own trio, a drummer named Leroy Williams and a bass player named Hal Dotson. And we've been playing together, we work together every Sunday at Bradley's, one night a week.
In New York City?
Yes, in New York. That's on University Place in the Village, you know. Nice place. And we'll be here, I think it's for 2 shows, 8 and 10, right? 8 and 10. So I know it's going to be at least 5,000 people in this little place. I don't know how we're going to get 5,000 in this place. The seat's 90. But... we'll get them in some kind of way.
Okay.
Sure, it would be something, you know, for once. I mean, it would be something to find some people who would be interested in. It would even be nice to have a few rock and roll people come so they can hear what some real jazz sound like, you know.
Is it a very different experience for you when you're playing with your own trio than when you're playing, for instance, on a recording
players?
Day? Yeah, with Sam Noto or Sonny Criss?
Yes, it's a difference, you know. I find that right now, as I've gotten older, I prefer trio work most of all, you know. That way I can just stretch out myself, you know. And I do prefer it most of all, you know. It's a difference nowadays than it was before. You know, like most horn players you played with before could really play, and there's a lot of horn players who can't play, and it's just a few who can, and you don't get a chance to play with them that often. And so my preference now is tending towards trio, you know.
Okay, and Barry Harris will be here with his trio May 10th at the Painted Bride. I want to thank you for coming to WUHY today.
My
I've enjoyed
pleasure.
Meeting you.
My pleasure.
And we'll hear another excerpt from the Barry Harris Plays Tad Dameron album. Again, it's on Xanadu Records, and this composition is called Kasbah. Thank you very much, Barry Harris.
Thank you very much.